You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Ken Klein. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Ken, I received an email from you yesterday with the title, Trump Draws First Blood with the Federal Reserve. A very interesting email. I want to get into that in great detail in a moment, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Yeah, I'm from a Jewish patriarchy. I've always, I don't even know how to explain it, always believed in Jesus from the time I was born. I had a deep reverence for Jesus and went into sports in my early days and didn't come to really know the Lord till I was about 25. So I had quite a career in athletics. I was a football player. I ended up playing for the University of Oregon for 3 years, and then I got picked up by the San Francisco 49ers and then the Houston Oilers and got devastated by injuries, and it brought a quick end to my career in the pros. And then I went on a long period of darkness where I didn't really know who I was or what I wanted to do, and then that's when I was intercepted. In fact, the matter is I was a defensive back. I was intercepted by God and became a follower of Jesus and have been for 50 years now. During that course of time, I pastored 3 churches. I've produced about 20 documentary films. I've written about 4 or 5 books and pretty much been on track for the last 50 years in a spiritual journey, I guess you could call it. But I'm not a religious person. I consider myself a spiritual person. So I've written a lot of things. I've done a lot of things for the kingdom of God. And now this new book is kind of the last work I've done, The Deep State Prophecy and the Last Trump. And then I have a film coming out shortly, The Four Horsemen of the Endgame. And that should be out in the next 30 days or so.
Thank you very much for explaining that, Ken. I guess it's never easy when someone decides to escape from a group or a clan or whatever you might call it. But how did your family and friends take you leaving the Jewish faith?
Well, I never really was of the Jewish faith. It was more of a genetic thing for me. My family wasn't very much into Judaism like so many people are. There's Orthodox, Conservative, and Reformed in the spectrum, and I think they were on the lowest level of Reform. So I never went to the synagogue much, maybe a few times. I never was bar mitzvahed. I kind of didn't want to go that route. My grandfather was a horse thief in the Boer War. My father never was bar mitzvahed. And so in our lineage, there's not a deep religious pathway. So that, I think, was a positive for me because it kept me from being entrapped in that whole cycle of thought of Judaism. I never was a religious Jew, but I was certainly ethnically orientated. My friends were all bar mitzvahed. I had a lot of Jewish friends, but I wasn't. So I kept out of the mainstream of that and at the same time still believed in the name of Jesus the whole time. And it took 25 years for me to find him or for him to find me. But that's pretty much how it happened for me.
Thanks, Ken, for explaining that. It's fascinating. You played professional football.
Yeah.
I don't get to talk to too many people who have done that. And the Niners, who I followed a lot in the 1980s. Wow, what position did you play? And briefly, what was it like then, the years you were in, compared to what it is now? I guess the most marked differences.
Well, I was a little guy. In fact, I didn't even play varsity football in high school. I was too small. And then all of a sudden, I decided to go to junior college because I love playing football. I was on the B team. There was a varsity, junior varsity, and B. I was on the B team. I was 140 pounds when I was a senior in high school, about 5'9 and a half. So I went to junior college to see if I could continue, and I started getting a little bit bigger. And so I got up to about 165, and I saved a bunch of money and decided to go up to the University of Oregon and try out. They didn't offer me a scholarship, so I tried out for the team. And lo and behold, miraculously, I beat everybody out. That was scholarship. They had to give me a scholarship because they wanted me to start. And so as a sophomore, I started. I had only played maybe 2 or 3 varsity games in junior college because I was injured most of the year. And here I was elevated to first string at the University of Oregon. And I started for 3 years. I ended up my career in college at 175 pounds. And then the 49ers sent a scout up to see me because I was pretty good. And they offered me a deal and I took it and got up to about 184 pounds. And I was doing quite well with the 49ers. And then I got smashed in the knee. And that was the end of that season. And the LA Rams offered me a deal. And I didn't want to go with the Rams. I should have. I think it was a mistake. But I ended up signing the next year with the Houston Oilers. And then I got into a terrible injury that ended my career rather quickly. So I didn't have much of a professional career. I had a great college career. But my professional career was cut short through injuries. And I think it was kind of like God in a divine intervention crippled me so that I'd look at life differently. differently. And I did. And that's when I came to Christ in 1969. And I've been with him for now over 50 years. So over that period of time, I've pastored churches, I've written books, I've done documentary films. I've been on hundreds and hundreds of radio shows. And I plan on doing that more as this new book has just come out, The Deep State Prophecy and the Last Trump, and then the film.
I watched the trailer for that too. I might have missed it. Did you say what position you played on football?
With the 49ers, I was a defensive halfback. That's a cult called a corner. And I decided after that season that I just wasn't quite fast enough for corner. I ran a 4.5 40, which is okay. But in the NFL, you've got to run 4.3 to be a corner. 4.5 is too slow because all you need is a yard on a DB and you got to beat. And 0.2 seconds is 2 yards. So I thought I got to move over to safety if I plan on any kind of a career in the NFL. So with the Oilers, I went to free safety, which doesn't require quite as much speed as a cornerback. Players today are so much better than my day. I might have been able to make it in this day at free safety, but certainly not at cornerback. But with the 49ers, I went for cornerback. I was second string to a guy that was Hall of Famer, Jimmy Johnson. And I was doing good at cornerback because I could read really quickly how a play would develop. And so I could get ahead of what was happening because I knew where they were going before they made their break. So I had that going. I could think faster than I could run. You still need that great speed to play cornerback in the NFL. And so in my day, athletes were fantastic, but compared to today, I don't think we could play, honestly.
Thank you for explaining that. The listeners of this interview are pretty familiar with some of the things you say here in the email. The Fed is an unconstitutional, secretive, unregulated, and private institution created outside the halls of Congress and controlled by international bankers. The way that they make money is what cripples us with the debt. And all of that money that's collected through the income tax, which of course was, the income tax was created the same year, coincidentally, as the Fed, prior to the Fed, of course, because they snuck the Fed bill in right around Christmas when most people were gone. It doesn't go to anything other than servicing the debt. And here Trump came out kind of against the Federal Reserve. And a lot of people were surprised about that. Of course, it seems like he wants the Fed to do its own thing and continue to print money, have cheap money out there. Give the listeners an idea about your take on the Fed and what perhaps is going on now with the new leadership and then what Trump is signaling to us about that.
In the news every day, we see all of this infighting inside the Beltway. And we as Americans are so shallow in our understanding of history that we really can't get an idea of how deeply rooted in the American fabric is this deep state. It's not just the fighting on Fox and CNN and all that we see every day, and we're caught up in all of the nuances of that. It's something very, very deep that goes way back in time. And of course, when you read my book, you'll see what I mean by that. What we're seeing play out before our very eyes every day is a collision. And I think people can relate to that because we see this division, great divide today in our political system between the conservatives and the liberals. And what this collision is two worldviews. One worldview is what George H. Bush said, we're going to have a new world order. He said that in the 1990s. He wasn't saying anything new because there were people back, Jacob Schiff talked about this in the 1890s. The bankers believed then, this is 1890s now. This is just one window into the whole idea of it. We're going to have a new world order, whether we want it or not, whether by consent or otherwise, or is it going to be by conquest? And so these people were talking about new world order way before George H. Bush talked about it. And so it's deeply rooted, this whole idea of one side of the polemic of this conflict, New World Order, is conflicting with our president's view of a nation state system. These are the two worldviews concerning how people would be governed. Would it be by a whole new world order, or would it be by the nation state system? And President Trump is about the nation state system. So we're seeing this collision between these two extremes play out in the news every day, and people can't understand it. All that exists is hatred for one for the other. And yet it goes all the way back into the whole British Empire and has been this whole drive for hundreds of years. In the last century, in 1912, when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, it was the globalists gaining control of credit and the flow of money. And so they have the power in the Federal Reserve to actually bring down presidents. All they have to do is dry up the liquidity in the system, and it's the economy, stupid, and the economy will go in the tank. And so President Trump knows where the power lies, and it's in money. And if they dry up the liquidity, then the economy goes in the tank, and the people are all angry, and they said, get this guy out of there. We got to do something different. So they can actually control who is president simply by expanding or contracting credit. And the bankers have this control. Great window into this whole episode. You can go back into the history of the United States when there was a duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton was, of course, crowned the father of the American banking system. And in these two men is this polemic again. Is it going to be globalists that control banking, or is it going to be nationalists that control banking? Of course, Hamilton wanted a central bank controlled by American nationalists. But Burr, who was a British spy and became vice president of the United States, wanted a central bank controlled by whom? Well, international bankers, i.e. the Rothschilds. So this whole polemic, this whole confusion, this whole conflict goes way back in American history and has been in place for hundreds of years. It emerged in the 1900s in the Federal Reserve Act when the internationalists finally gained control of our banking system with the Federal Reserve Act. The Federal Reserve is not federal. It's not even a reserve. It's a private corporation controlled by the stockholders, which are the international bankers, especially in control of the New York Federal Reserve branch, which pretty much controls the whole system. And so our country was captured by the international bankers in 1912. It came law in 1913. And all this debt that we're trying to catch up with goes back to the Rothschilds, because Nathan would say, I care not who makes the laws of a nation. Give me the money and I'll make the laws. And that's exactly what's happened. It goes all the way back to the British banking houses, London. And that's what this book's all about. And people don't understand the roots of this problem. They'll just be caught up with it. Contemporary nuances played out in the media every day, Sean Hannity or CNN, all that is just this rabble-rousing of these extreme aspects of the polemics. I hope that makes sense to you, but that's what we're seeing every day played out in the news, and people are caught up with it, and they don't really understand what's going on. And I wrote this book, and I've done this film, so people can see objectively what's happening to them, because whatever a man has overcome, it is by this that he is controlled. And so we are controlled by all of this, and we don't know how to stand against it so that we aren't consumed by it. But that's why I wrote this book, and that's why I've done this film.
Thank you for explaining that. Yeah, of course, it does make sense. The Rothschilds, there's people who will say, what do you mean the Rothschilds? I don't see the Rothschilds anywhere in the news. Isn't that some kind of an anti-Semitic canard? What would you say to them?
I'd say, well, I happen to be Jewish, so I'm not anti-Semitic. So it gives me the right to say it. But let me tell you about the Rothschilds. They're a fascinating family. Amschel Rothschild was the father of five sons who deployed across Europe to set up their own banking houses. They went international a long time ago. Along about middle part of the 1800s, 1870, the East India House, which was controlled by Rothschilds, they owned it. They went invisible. And the reason they did was because their imperialism was so tyrannical. They conquered China through opium, and they conquered India by getting slave labor so they could get cotton into their control of the textile industry in the 1800s. And they became so infamous that they had to disband, or at least have the appearance that they disbanded. So they went rogue by going invisible. And they were able to control the history books and everything printed about them that was deleterious, and they went invisible. And in fact, in the last 20 years, they used to control the price of gold, the exchequer in the Bank of England, which is right across the street. But they went invisible and erased themselves and redacted themselves from British history. So you never know. They were pulling the strings like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. They're behind the curtain doing all this stuff, and you can't see it because they have so much money that they can affect the history books. They can affect Wikipedia, everything. They can infiltrate in such a way that they can erase themselves from history. So yeah, people say, well, I've never heard of them. Well, of course not. You're not going to. They are brilliant in being invisible so that they're never accused, and they can continue to operate behind the scenes invisibly. So what they did about 20 years ago, they allowed the Lloyd's of London to control and dictate the price of gold and silver, which is the de facto measurement for every currency in the world. And so they control it through the Lloyd's of London, and they don't have to be seen. That's their proxy. proxies. And the Lloyd's of London, they go back into the history of England. They were the ones that insured the slave trade boats. So they have a very, very dark past and are in alignment with House of Rothschild. The Lloyd's of London are in the city of London, which is called the Crown. The Crown is not the Queen. That's the monarchical system. The Crown is a private corporation in the city of London, which is 1 mile square. So people don't understand these things. They can't see it. They're blinded. That's why I expose it in my book, The Deep State Prophecy and the Last Trump, and the film coming out that I just mentioned earlier.
Thank you, Ken, for explaining that. I want to ask you about the book in a second, but I just want to ask one more question about the Fed and, of course, the whole system around the Fed with the Rothschilds. Could this be described as primarily a Jewish game?
No, I wouldn't characterize it as that, because the Rothschilds repudiated their Judaism. They're basically atheistic Jews like Bernie Sanders is. They don't hold to anything precious to them about the history of Israel or the Jewish people. They are outside of that. They're more likely to be characterized as Freemasons. If you went to the Scottish Rite Freemason Museum it's not even a museum, it's basically their church in Washington, D.C., on their table, I went there just recently, you would see a Quran, you'd see a Talmud, and you'd see a Bible. And there are many ways to God, like what Oprah Winfrey preaches, which is a dilution of the gospel, because they're not really Jews in the biblical sense. They're just in namesake at best. So I wouldn't consider it a Jewish conspiracy. I think that's what Hitler wanted to portray when he came up with his final solution. That was get rid of the whole race of the Jews to deal with the Jewish bankers. They're not really Jewish. They have some thought about the Jews back with the Balfour Declaration in 1917, but they're really not Jews. They're basically aristocrats that are atheistic and more into Freemasonry than Judaism. So it's not a Jewish conspiracy, although this is what people would say,
right,
that I'm saying, but I happen to be a Jewish person. I love Israel. I go there all the time. I made films there, and I love the Jewish people, love my grandparents and all that. So I guess if there's anybody that has any credibility about saying something about this is a Jewish person, because I'm not ashamed to say it. The Jews are really, in many respects, enemies of the gospel, but it's not a Jewish conspiracy. It's an atheistic conspiracy.
Okay. But how about the fact that they're Jewish? They were born Jewish and, like you said, ethnically Jewish. Predominantly, these people who are involved in this Federal Reserve conspiracy, are they predominantly Jewish? Not whether or not they practice that religion.
I can't answer that objectively because I don't know the personalities involved in the Federal Reserve right now. So I can't really speak to that. But if I were to give you my gut on it, I'd say I don't think so. I think they're more aligned with Masonry. The people that came over on the Mayflower, there were some Jews, there was Masons, and there was Christians. The people that predominated the development of this country were Masons and Deists. They weren't really Christians. Although we say, well, it's a Christian country. I mean, it never was a Christian country. It was basically this deistic and Masonic influence that was so powerful. I mean, you look at the Washington Monument. It's an Egyptian obelisk. And Washington was a Mason. He wasn't a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason, although the Scottish Rite Freemasonry claim him as such. He was not nearly up the totem pole on Masonry. But the Masonic influence in the United States is without question. And there is also in Washington, D.C., a biblical museum, which is fantastic. So you see these two forces there in Washington, D.C., but America is more Masonic than Christian, although there's a tremendous Christian influence. It was basically the people that signed on to the Constitution were mostly Masons.
The book just came out this year, 281 pages, so it's a nice size book. It's about a 6x9, thereabouts. Cool title, The Deep State Prophecy and the Last Trump. Explain to the listeners how you came up with that title and what it means.
It just came to me. What can I say? The deep state prophecy is something that goes back in time. It's not necessarily to be viewed as a foretelling as much as a forthtelling. So much of prophecy is forthtelling, not foretelling. We are dominated with the idea that prophecy is all about the future. But well, let me explain it this way. When the Lord said to Moses, hey, go down and tell Pharaoh, my people go and just tell him this. And Moses said, well, how do I know that you're sending me? He says, well, when you're back here at Mount Sinai, then you'll know that I spoke to you. That's quite a prophecy. And Jesus said, I've told these things to you beforehand, so when they come to pass, you'll know that I've spoken. So these things were spoken long ago, but they're happening right now. So it's not foretelling, it's forthtelling. And so the deep state prophecy is something historical. It goes way back in time. It's a powerful, malignant force in this world that's bringing us to this conclusion. I think President Trump has been sent by the Lord to give us more time to gather more people for the kingdom of God. that we're called to. So he's more of a restraining force than necessarily a foretelling of a future. And so the deep state goes back in time. And when you see it, you'll see it more clearly today as it's being played out right before our eyes in the media. Every day you're seeing this happen. And when you get an objective understanding of this, you won't get sucked into the nuances of the political world. If you do watch TV and you do watch politics, you ought to be praying for these people. It should be a way to guide you in your prayers, but rather than as entertainment or just watching a movie, which most people do when they're into the political world and seeing the conflict. But these things are happening and come upon us because God already spoke them to us long ago, and now we're seeing them play out right in our present time, right before our eyes every day.
It does seem like it's never been more obvious, at least to me anyway, the battle, for lack of a better term, between good and evil. It seems like it is playing out right before our eyes, and we can see who the good guys and the bad guys are. And many times it really does seem to me, at least, that Trump and us, the unwashed masses, we're the good guys. And I'm always amazed that this one man who has been under such extreme pressure, especially from this most recently revealed witch hunt hoax, that he's still carrying on. I know lesser men or women would have crumbled under this pressure. How do you think he does it?
Two things. First of all, God is sovereign and God makes sovereign choices. And this man's been put in this place as a godsend, I believe. And he's been equipped with special abilities to deal with all of these things, even though he's surfaced his own imperfections. Just like difficulty in our own lives surface our imperfections. He's a man, but he's also been sent by God with special blessings and anointings and strengthenings. So the kingdom of God surrounds this guy, and that means there's angelic powers that accompany him so that he can do this. It's supernatural thing that we're watching in him being able to stand in this intense scrutiny and pressure and evil. But it's also God's people praying for him. I just can't emphasize it enough that if you watch the news, you better look at the news and pray for this man that needs our support in prayer. And prayer's real. God answers our prayers. So those are the things that I see about why he's able to handle the best that we can imagine him standing against all of this stuff, because God is with him. And if God be with you, who can be against you? So all of these elements amount to the fabric with why he is able to deal with all of this craziness, because it is unbelievable. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you for explaining that, Ken. Yeah, it really is. And that makes sense. I know in our everyday lives here, the mere mortals that we are, sometimes the smallest thing can throw us off. And it does. And here's this guy with the weight of the world on his shoulders being attacked from almost every direction.
24/7. Somebody cuts me off on the freeway, and I might even say a bad word. Somebody cuts me off, that's my big trial. Like what we go through, what surfaces bad expressions of maybe profanity or something like that, or just wanting to get out of the car and punch somebody. The negative things that happen from the outside world on us surface their imperfections. And yet this poor man, I just go, this poor man, what he's got to endure, it's unbelievable. And yet people are so quick to criticize him, and they don't even look at their own circumstances and how they're affecting the way they respond. I don't know if anybody's ever, other than Jesus, maybe, been affected by so much hatred. It's unbelievable. And so, again, we got to be praying for him.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've never seen anything like it, the amount of hatred that's directed to him. I think that's why there's so many common people like us who can recognize that in him. And then I think if the deep state ever tried to remove the guy, I really believe that there would be a groundswell from the public just jumping up and literally getting on the street and marching toward Washington, D.C. and saying, leave him alone. It is kind of an amazing thing. And you talk about that in your book, Ken?
You know, the thing that's really interesting in my book is that I deal with these two beasts. One beast is this system of empires that started with the Egyptian Empire, go all the way through the British Empire to the present day New World Order in Manhattan, which is characterized by the United Nations. But there's other things going on in the second beast, which is called the false prophet, which I don't talk about in my film, but I do talk about in my book, that this entity has its amazing powers to affect the disabling of God's people, one of which is this thing called the image of the beast, which I believe, and I explain it in depth in my book, is international media control. And when you talk about media control and the ability for them to manage the information that we get, one of the things they're doing and trying to do is eliminate free speech and the ability to communicate with one another. So right now, for example, in Facebook, they control who gets your messages. They also control it through YouTube. These are the same people that control all this information. So the ability to stop us from communicating would eliminate the possibility for organizing to deal with it. So it's becoming harder and harder to communicate in a way that people can be organized to deal with the problems in a groundswell against the evil. They know what they're doing. They are powerful people that are brilliant. That's why I say our time is short. President Trump has maybe 5.5 years left. What happens when he's gone? There isn't anybody like him. So we don't have a long time to be able to prepare for the negativity in the outside world that can control us. That's why I constantly say, what a man is controlled by, this is by which he is overcome. And the only way to deal with it is not where we can organize to overthrow the wickedness in the Congress or these people that are speaking against our own president, but to be able to just stand and not let it overcome us. And so people need to be fortified on the inner man so that they're not overcome by this outside world, because the outside world is overcoming a lot of people. A lot of Christians are falling. I have a friend that's a pastor, and he's speaking against Trump. I'm going, what would you rather have, Nancy Pelosi? Are you crazy? Or Hillary Clinton? Or any of these other people? They're incredibly insane, and yet they come off as very normal. So people are succumbing to the outer world's temptations to be compromised. And that's why it says in the scriptures, put on the full armor of God, having done all to stand. So we're not going to be able to change the world, but we can keep it from changing us. And that's why I do what I do, is to fortify God's people to stand against the evil day.
I've thought that same thing. I mean, looking at these other people, and that's a nice word for them, people. I could say something else. But looking at these other characters, and I thought the same thing. What don't you get? Would you want one of these people there in that position? And it just doesn't make sense to me. So many things don't make sense. Kenneth B. Klein, author of The Deep State Prophecy and the Last Trump. Ken, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks a lot for having me on.